We're back, and we've been talking to Jason Berry, author of City of a Million Dreams. I hope y'all enjoyed the interview. I really enjoyed it. It's a great book, a great read. I am might be one of the slowest readers in America, and I got through it fairly quick. A history of New Orleans at year 300, and just to kind of put things in its perspective, only about the last 30 or 40 pages of the book is post Katrina, so it's pretty much everything leading up into the 70s and 80s and early 90s, and it covers a lot of a number of occurrences in the city's history. You will find a lot of information that you know a little bit about if your experience is the same as mine, then that you have these aha moments as you're reading through the book. We want to hear from you, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. Anything about New Orleans history that strikes you as odd? You may want to get the book. I really enjoyed it, and thank Jason for spending some time. He seems to have a very busy schedule this week as he goes out on his book tour. For this, it's called City of a Million Dreams, A History of New Orleans at Year 300. I specifically was talking to him about the influences of the Ursulines and the Jesuits. They're in the book in a big way, as well as a number of the other religious orders and the influence that they had on the history of the city. And it was funny that the Ursulines actually helped the Jesuits in many of their endeavors when they came to the city, which was kind of interesting to me. I'd never heard about that. We are going to be talking to Mayor LaToya Cantrell in the next hour, at the noon hour. In the presentation of the budget, she has presented it to the city council. Many of the items in there, they have applauded her in moving forward there. We're going to talk about the vision that she has for the city, how she goes about accomplishing that vis-a-vis the budget document that's been presented, and obviously crime, drainage, the sewage and water board issues continue to present themselves and reveal problems that hopefully the new director will be able to change and move the organization in a different direction. Obviously, funding continues to be an issue. The drainage department the other day had announced that it is broke. It's funny, not funny, ironic, I guess, when you read the book, there are a lot of passages that talk about pallets that are set up as sidewalks with made out of board and plank for the times where the Mississippi River comes up, or Lake Pontchartrain, a storm comes in and they have a prevailing wind, and the high tide moves the water across the city, and the plight that they have to deal with in that, many of which are the still modern day rainstorms that we deal with and the challenges of this particular location. So it's always kind of very interesting from that standpoint. I wanted to talk about in this next half hour, and we'll start now. President Macron of France says that nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism. And I believe him to be mistaken. And further, I believe his statement to be, I guess, a futile effort to diminish President Trump's aggressive style towards and demands of our allies. I don't agree with everything President Trump says, and I don't agree with his delivery by any stretch of the imagination. I do, however, look back at some of the pacts, the deals, and others that we have signed as a country that in many respects come back to haunt us. So his approach, in my view, simply does not mean that we are on a path toward aggression in a physical sense, nor an impenetrable position or ideology that removes compromise from consideration. So what does it mean at the end of the day? To me, it means that our allies will have to make a stronger case to convince the United States if that consideration requires any number of concessions contrary to our U.S. best interests. It seems to me that historically we were willing to make these concessions almost on a whim, and not really evaluating or recognizing the downstream implications of saying. I think this position may be viewed as an intellectual and diplomatic exercise that requires, and in some sense promotes, a challenge to think more about each other in a meaningful way because of the necessity to convince, albeit not so easily, is paramount in order to foster and nurture the relationship that we have with one another as allies. President Macron's simplistic, mutually exclusive view of nationalism and globalism, in my view, is a short-sighted view of history, as well as the challenges of the future. What country is on whose side is definitely more complex today, I think, than it has ever been. However, the significant growth of globalism strategies, I believe, have flourished in large part because of nationalism and patriotism ideals that compel and bring about a tinge of compromise. It's human nature. We do what's in our best interest first. But if we think long-term, what's in our best interest in the short-term may not always be what is in our best interest in the long-term, and therefore brings about an air of compromise. And all the while recognizing that at some point, for lack of a better term, an audit of the diplomatic trail that brought us to where we are with these deals today and how they occurred, this occurrence should not be interpreted as a complete ideological shift, but rather just simply a calculation to not only move forward, but grow exponentially together in a manner that is sustainable for both. It does not necessarily mean that everything that we did previously was wrong. But what do we fear in looking back in order to determine whether the course of action that we took 20, 30, or 40 years ago is necessarily the best path that we should be on today? The contemporary challenges that are faced with these treaties and otherwise that we've engaged in over the years, that diplomatically were in slow motion almost relative to the growth of the economies, the globalistic strategies of each individual country moving forward, I think begs of a review, of an audit, in order to determine how we are going to both, as countries across this world, could be in a win-win proposition. And President Macron, I think, when he says that nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism, doesn't quite understand the necessity for both. Love to hear what you think about that. Give us a call, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. It seems as though, and most of the pundits are saying, that it was a shot at the United States. I don't know about you, but I'm not one that's going to apologize for being proud and have pride in our country, pride in our culture, and pride in who we are. So many people gave up their lives for that very fact. We'll be right back after the break. We're back, and we're talking about President Macron's statement in France the other day. And, in the Blue Runner opinion poll, do you think nationalism and patriotism are mutually exclusive? Would want to hear from you. Give us a call, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. Specifically, what he said was nationalism is betrayal of patriotism. Let's go to line one, talk to Rashad. What say you, Rashad? Rashad, you there? Oh, we're having some technical difficulties. We'll try and work that out. All right. So, you know, what President Macron said was that nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism. And just wanted to know what your thoughts were. 260-1870. Nationalism is defined and as a political ideology, is a political, social, and economic system characterized by the promotion of the interests of a particular nation, especially with the aim of gaining and maintaining sovereignty over their homeland. And patriotism is the quality of being patriotic, vigorous support for one's country. I don't see where nationalism is the betrayal of patriotism. And as I pointed out in my opening statements, I do not see that that globalism runs contrary to any of that. If anybody actually believes that they're not looking out, all of these countries are not looking out for their own best self-interest first, you're sadly mistaken. How do you think these political animals get reelected? By giving the house away? That's not how it works. They have to look at the industrial complexes of their country, the business cycles, so many different things, whether or not there's enough money left for domestic issues in dealing with international issues as it relates to defense of their homeland, defense of their territories, defense of so many different things as you think about this from a globalistic standpoint. So the issue is when dealing with our allies, as I pointed out, it seems to me that the exercise promotes more of a challenge. And that if we're going to maintain and foster these agreements with one another, it promotes that challenge to think about what it is that the other side needs to get out of these agreements in order to survive their own political slippery slope issues day in and day out. Not necessarily that we engage just for the sake of engagement. And who's on what side? That is a much more complex question than it was as presented in post-World War II, as it was presented in post-Cold War. And I think until we think about things just a little bit differently, we're not going to move. I think Rashad is there on line one. Rashad, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, New?
Yes,
you
sir.
Know I like to talk. You know I love talking to you. Now, listen, let's get something straight. That definition of nationalism, right?
Yep.
What's the definition?
I just read it. A political, social, and economic system characterized by the promotion of the interests of a particular nation, especially with the aim of gaining and maintaining sovereignty over the homeland.
Right. Treason.
Treason?
Treason. That's the word for that.
And why would that be?
Because your political views and values are to go against your own government.
To guard what?
To go against your own government.
I'm not clear. I'm not understanding what you're saying.
Okay. Your political views.
I know what my political views are.
Is that of you don't think the federal government are doing what they're supposed to do. You dissatisfied. So you take, just like the Civil War, treason.
Well, I'm not one. It's not my political views. It's a collective views of the country, albeit that we're mired in challenging one another as to what that's going to be. But at some point in time, we have to set aside our differences for what is going to ultimately be in the benefit of the country. And where we find that common ground, I think, is going to be the key. Rashard, if you want to hold on, I'll come back to you after the break, but I got to get to a break now. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL. We're back and on the Blue Runner opinion poll. Do you think nationalism and patriotism are mutually exclusive? 63% of the respondents say no. So we're going to go back and talk about treason with Rashard. Rashard,
all right. Now, Newell, let's be honest. You're a lawman, like I always tell you. And when I talk and when I call, brother, I'm not going to waste your time, nor you listening. So I'm going to say this. We have Agent Orange down the con, right, in the office. Now, just the thing, patriotism would have made him, when he went to Florida, when he was in Paris, he would have went to the National Cemetery and respect those gentlemen that died. So he and his family, which none of them would serve in the military, can have a good life and live a free life void of all the...
I don't disagree with you. Actions speak louder than words.
Veterans Day was yesterday.
Right.
And what he did, as all other presidents didn't do, even in the rain with my former president, Barack Obama, he went in the rain and gave speeches. This guy sat at home and read a tweet, lies on top of lies. I don't like my grandchild to lie to me, I don't want my children lying to me, and I'm sure not going to accept the president, the person holding that office, supposed to respect that officer.
So, Rashard, you judging by this one occurrence?
No. Ever since he's been in office.
So let me ask you this: Do you think you should apologize for having patriotic feelings, towards your country?
Let me tell you something: It's patriotic when you stand up for the people in North Dakota who are been living in North Dakota who can't vote. Why are the people not going there to stand up
but
for
who,
the United
who's,
States?
Whose fault is that? That's left to the states. That's not the president.
But we have a federal government that has to step in and make sure.
But that's not how it's set up. That's not how the republic is set up. So you can't put
I like a comprehensive
way to vote. I think this is a joke that a week later we're still counting votes and their own self-imposed deadlines. Their leaders are saying, we're not going to be able to reach them. Then why did you put these self-imposed deadlines in if you're not able to reach them?
And I'm a person like this. If it's a violation by the poll officials that they're violating, I'm a law person.
If they violated it,
I'm going to tell you this on record. They should be held accountable.
Absolutely.
Everybody, including Rick Scott, who's saying... Talking about fraud, he's the governor. He should be excluding himself from that, as well as Mr. Kemp.
Rashard, I got to get to a break. I appreciate your call. Appreciate your comments. We'll be right back. Stay with us. 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. Is patriotism and nationalism mutually exclusive? We'll be right back. We're back, and we're talking about whether or not you think nationalism and patriotism are mutually exclusive. 67% of the respondents say no on our Blue Runner opinion poll. Let's go to line two, Ronnie and Harahan. What say you, Ronnie?
Hey, Lou, how you doing, sir?
Doing great.
All right. I just want to say this. You know, over time, I think definitions change with times and with people. And I think nationalism has been it's almost synonymous nowadays with racism. And the reason is because it's been placed, the word white has been placed in front of it so much that it's almost synonymous with racism.
Ronnie, would the same thing hold true if you put black in front of it?
Yeah.
Because there are those groups as well.
I would think so. I mean, look at it this way, right? There's Black Lives Matter. Black Panthers, both of those weren't started out as seen as racist.
Hello?
It's just that.
Ronnie, we're going to have to get you back on the line because we're losing you. Let's go to Lloyd on line three. What say you, Lloyd?
How are you?
Good, and you?
I'm good. Let me say this. They are absolutely mutually exclusive. Absolutely. Now, we can say, well, words have multiple meanings, and what I mean is this when I use that term. However, that doesn't mean that the rest of the world is not hearing it, getting a different message.
So why do you say they're mutually exclusive?
Because we have the President of the United States aligning himself with a word that other groups stand up and say, I'm a nationalist, and what that means to me is that people of color are not welcome in my country. That does not make you patriotic because, as a black man, I was born in Jefferson City, Missouri, and this is as much my country as anybody else's.
Of course it is. But what has specifically Trump done to say, and I'm not here to defend Trump, but I'm just curious, what has he done to imply that his embracing nationalism means that he's engaged in racist conduct?
Well, let me say this, that he aligned, he said that people who are nationalist, white supremacist, same thing, interchangeable word, were good people.
You say they're in interchangeable words. I don't necessarily believe that. And most of the people that I talk to don't believe that either.
Okay, so your solution would be for me to change my definition and the history behind the word.
No. What I'm saying, well, first off, your applied history behind this word, I'm not sure where that's rooted.
David Duke. Let's start there.
Well, I know a lot about David Duke. I mean, he was elected in my representative district. I never voted for him. I thought he's a knucklehead. I still think he's a knucklehead, and he's not going to be anything but a knucklehead. But,
he called himself a nationalist.
Well, he called himself a white nationalist, and he was all about white supremacy. If we put any number of qualifiers in front of that, do you believe that they're a black nationalist?
I believe that black nationalism and white nationalism are two entirely different things. And what I mean
and
by
that— explain
most,
that to me.
Most black nationalists are looking to create a separate country for black people.
Okay.
That's where they are. They're not, it's not about, this is my country and you're an invader in my country, even though you were born in Jefferson City, Missouri.
And you think one is better than the other?
I don't think that's the point. The question
that's very much the point.
Well, I think that
it's amazing that, let me ask this question. Are those folks racist?
Absolutely not.
Oh,
absolutely
God.
Not. I mean, if you—
Would it be racist if white people say, we want our own country?
If they want to go and get another country, sure, but don't try and take this.
Why is it not, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander?
There could be a white country that is started somewhere on the planet.
But what's the practical reality when you talk about black nationalists and having another country? Relatively slim and none, and Slim just walked out the door, right? We'll be right back after the break.